Welcome, everyone, to another exciting episode of Are You Not Kentertained? This is episode 56, and today's date is June 28th, 2017. I am your host, Carrie, and I'm joined this week by, a guy who's usually pretty angry. No, not Russ. He's on vacation, and I'm talking about Kent. How you doing, Kent?
I'm super. Thanks for asking. All things considered, I couldn't be better, I must say.
Very good. Very.
How are you?
Good. You know, integrating back into my normal life after being in upstate for the past 2 weeks. But outside of that, doing pretty well.
How does race play into anything here?
I have no idea.
Okay. Well, I mean, that's cool if you're reintegrating. It's about time for you and Eric, really. You guys.
So, for our first-time listeners, we like to recap and discuss the week in pro wrestling. We also have a few fun segments that we'd like to share with you as well. However, since Russ is MIA, we're going to change things up a bit this week and start talking about women's wrestling.
Is he really MIA? That's like Miami. He's in MAI, right?
I thought it was ME.
Yeah, probably is. Whatever the fuck Maine is, that's where that bumpkin motherfucker is.
Yeah. Oh, well. So, Kent, this was a big week in women's wrestling. We had a couple big matches on Raw and SmackDown, but let's talk about the biggest one first. Let's talk about Money in the Bank. The second time ever Money in the Bank women's ladder match. Let me just start this off by saying, I can't believe they're starting to use the words second time ever. I don't know if you've read anything for the blog yet, but Eric's starting to get a tick.
A tick, you say?
Yes, anytime he hears the words second time ever, second time, first time ever, or I think it's historic, he drinks. I'm worried about his health. I seriously am.
WWE is going to send all of us to an early grave with their words. Actually, you know, now that you mention it, I mean, this is one of many rants I have for the evening, but let me tell you what grinds my gears. WWE's choice of words, mainly historic. You know, it's kind of like you and I, long time ago, we talked about epic and how it gets overused, right? Same idea, because if you keep telling us everything's historic, historic starts losing its meaning. Like, every week you can't be telling us something's historic, because realistically WWE should have, what, 2-3 historic things a year? Would you consider that fair?
I mean, I would agree with that. I mean, seriously, it's like they don't have a dictionary or let me try that again.
Thesaurus.
Yes, thesaurus. Yeah, I can talk today, everyone.
Yeah, it's a dangerous dinosaur right there.
This is true.
It's one of those things where it loses its impact. The word loses its impact. And you would think WWE should know that and should know we don't want to kill the impact of this word. It was kind of like how they did the once-in-a-lifetime thing. I always like to pick on that because you advertise it for once-in-a-lifetime, then the next night, you know, hey, Cena, let's have another match, okay? All right, Rack. Well, the fuck, man? Like, no, you do it one time, you have a winner. It's kind of like when they did Warrior and Hogan. That was all, like, that was a one-time thing, and I think that made it memorable. It made it historic. And then WCW is like, we can make money off that. We can have Ultimate Warrior reappearing and disappearing in mirrors. That'll make sense. That'll be good. They need to stop using the term historic, find other words as you suggested, or just don't tell, like, make history mean something. Like, on Talking Smack, did you watch Talking Smack?
I did not. That is way past my bedtime. And I have access to the network during the day before the podcast.
I highly, highly, highly recommend it. And at one point they talk about Kevin Owens was the first guest and he was fan-fucking-tastic. They talk about, you know, what's more important, to be the champion of the universe or champion of the United States? And they, like, made fun of the Universal title, and they've been making fun of the Universal title a lot lately, even in commentary and stuff, I've noticed. That's the problem. When you job a guy who held the belt for, like, I don't know, 5 months, would you say? Kevin Owens held it for about 5 months before he lost it to Goldberg in a complete throwaway match in which he never got his rematch. Does that ever make sense that Kevin Owens never got a rematch for the belt that he lost very cheaply?
No, he's owed a rematch, but he'll never get it because he's on another brand. It's kind of ridiculous if you think about it.
I hope, so, like, in 2 years he goes back to Raw, Amy is like, you know, I lost my belt to Goldberg, I deserve a rematch. That'd be great. WWE don't remember things, you know, beyond 3 days, but it'd be fantastic. Anyways, point is, stop saying historic, because Eric's going to have a drinking problem. I may grow hair, and the world will go upside down into the up-down... What the fuck? Upside down? I don't know. Where the fuck it was in Stranger Things? My memory's good.
The, upside down, I think is what it was called. If I remember correctly. I watched that a long time ago. But... And they need to stop saying historic first time ever, yada, 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 because I'm running out of wrestlers that I really don't like that I need to start marking out for.
Eventually you're just going to become Smark Smarkington there. You know, that will be bad for you.
No, I'm his female cousin, Missy Markington.
Oh, Missy Markington. Nice.
Anyway, let's get back to Money in the Money in the Bank match. So, I'll be honest, I actually fell asleep during this.
Really? Was you bored or were you just tired?
I was tired. Eric fell asleep, woke up again, tried to watch it, and then fell asleep again. There was a lot of sleeping going on in this household. But with that said, I watched the recap, read the recap today, and... I was quite impressed with everyone. It was a good match. I'm happy with the outcome. As I said on the blog at 9deuce.com/wrestling, if Carmella didn't get the briefcase back, I was going on a women's wrestling hiatus.
Yeah. You know, first of all, fuck Eric, because him and Twan are talking about SmackDown as it's happening, and as you know, I'm not watching that shit live. So eventually I have to put the phone away... And I can't look at my phone for the next couple hours until I watch SmackDown, so back of my hand to you two fucks. Second of all, that match was really, really, really good. There's little doubt in my mind that it'll be the women's match of the year, unless, like, Ember Moon and Asuka, or maybe one of the Asian ladies, I think they're both Japanese, they're coming over. Maybe they have a match of the year in the women's classic. Right now... No doubt, that's match of the year. As you point out, if Carmella didn't win, I was losing my faith in wrestling, and I really wasn't going to watch next week. I was just going to take a week off and say, fuck it, because I'm sick of the fuckery that goes on. And then Natalya and Charlotte went over the barricade, and I was like, okay, I can start to live with this. Two out of the three outcomes are not so bad. I didn't want Becky to win, not because I don't like her. I just, you know, whatever, she's had her turn. I was like, if Tamina were to win, though, something interesting could come of this. Carmella could talk shit to Tamina. That could be an interesting angle. And then Carmella won it fair and square. And they did take their bumps. With that being said, and this is something Daniel Bryan, I feel... touched on in Talking Smack. Women's bodies are not really meant for this. I mean, nobody's body is meant for a ladder match, right? But these women are not like, you know, if Braun Strowman takes a hit on a ladder, it hurts a hell of a lot less than Carmella. Because, you know, meatiness, for lack of a better term. These women are not taking the big bumps, nor should they be, but if they're not going to take the bumps, you shouldn't put them in the match. Would you not agree with that?
I mean, you would think that would be the logic for setting up a match such as this. But with that said, they did a really good job with it. Yeah, a lot of them are going to be sore and bruised today. But they did a good job. They did justice to the, well, second time ever match.
This match should have been the first. Alright, so this is a question on the blog, but let's tackle it. Should this have been the match that we got at the pay-per-view, or was it better to have the whole first match with Ellsworth, have the storyline last week, and then have this match?
I mean, given the fact that Carmella retained the briefcase, that whole storyline was kind of pointless. I mean, I don't know what your thoughts are on that, but I felt it was pointless. I mean, both matches were good, but yeah, I was confused.
It's a tad redundant. I mean, the only thing that I like the fact that it gave James Ellsworth more of a platform, but it's kind of hysterical because this is supposed to be all about the women. Like, they could have given Ellsworth, like, his own platform some other time, but at the Shining Beacon, the height of the women's revolution, James Ellsworth is standing tall, and it's a storyline for 9 days and 2 matches and 9 days. It was a good match, though. It was really good. And I gotta say, Charlotte, you know I hate to say this, but Charlotte looked like $1 million that night. Also, she came out in the black robe, which she looks way better in the black robe than any of her other colored robes. I don't know what your thoughts are, but I think it looks better on her. Might just be because the black goes, you know, such a opposite of her hair color, but it looks so much better than, I can't even remember, does she have like a green and a purple? Blue. She has blue.
She has green. She has purple. She has that peacock colored one. But
The peacock.
I mean, she looks good in everything. I mean, even when I saw her at AwesomeCon, she looked good. She looked really good. And she is so sweet, too. She's like the biggest sweetheart you'll ever meet or ever talk to.
I don't know. I bet Bailey is. I have to assume Bailey is like one of the most naturally nicest people in the world. Doesn't she just strike? I mean, like, I know it's her wrestling character, but can you actually picture, like, Bailey having, like, a bad day and, like, being a bitch about it? I can't fathom that.
I can't either. And I read an article where they listed, like, the nicest female wrestlers and kind of, like, the bitchiest. And Bailey was one of the nice ones. Charlotte was one of the nice ones. Sasha was one of the bitchy ones, actually.
I can see that. I can see her having some mean days. Was Stephanie on the list? If she was, she was on the nice list, right?
Yes, she was.
She comes off like a genuine sweetheart as well, so no surprise.
Yeah, I mean, the one thing I liked about Charlotte during her entire Q&A at AwesomeCon was she was just so humble. I mean, she's Ric Flair's daughter. She shouldn't be humble. This is kind of almost her birthright, but she is. She's just like, I love the fact that I get to do this. It's not what I mean, it's definitely not what I always wanted to do, but I'm glad I get the opportunity.
You got to go to her Q&A. I want to see her TNA. Like, lots of A's going around here. It's fantastic. We're raising the bar every moment here today.
This is true. Speaking of raising the bar, let's talk Lana and Naomi quickly. That was, something.
Was it? I'm sorry, like, I blinked. I may have, like, checked my phone to yell at, like, Eric and Tuan, and next thing I know, I'm hearing, I'm amazing, and I'm like, the fuck just happened here? Like, I think Lana hit her finishing move, like, the second or third move in the match. She got kicked out. Naomi hit one move, and then Naomi did a split leg and moonsault, which it looked good. She performed it well, but she did not land on, like, Lana took zero damage. Lana sold it like $1 million. That did not hit in any shape or form, and that was the winning move. Lame.
Yeah, that's pretty much why I said it was something.
Would you? I know we give Naomi a lot of credit, but I'm going to give her a hit here. I mean, she needs to... She's capable. We know she's capable. She's got to do better. Like, I know they didn't give them time to work it, but that finisher... A finisher looks like shit if it don't look right. You know what I mean? Like, a finisher needs to... If nothing else, she could have done another move. Like, it would have taken an extra 10 seconds, but make it look well. I'm sure at the time she probably thought that it looked well. So, I don't know. Really, it's nobody's fault. Like, I'm sure in the back, Vince McMahon's not yelling, like, that looked like shit, into the ref's ear, and the ref's like, wait, stop the pin, go ahead another move. I'm sure that's not how it goes, but it's disappointing. And now I'm like, what do they do with Lana? Have they ruined Lana already? Have they fucked her up already?
That was actually my question as well. I mean, I just feel like they threw her into this title picture with, like, no backstory, no reason. They just threw her in there. I mean, I raised this in the blog. Why didn't they just put her in the Money in the Bank match? Why did Naomi have to have a match at Money in the Bank? Just, it just doesn't make sense to me.
I think in hindsight, now I will say that I was excited the first 2 weeks that Lana came out. She made an impact. I was like, all right, she's got a match. I know she's going to have an okay match. I never expected anything amazing, but I was like, it won't be too bad. And that's what we got until we got to the illogical, work on leg, then hit finisher on back. With that being said, I would much rather have had Lana been the heel that hid under the ring, and when she heard, everybody crash, come out from the bottom of the ring and try to climb the ladder. Also, would have given Naomi a platform to be on commentary, which would have really helped her as a star, because then people get to know her, get to relate a little bit to her. They need to put more people on commentary, because that always helps develop the character. They missed an opportunity here. Lana never needed to take many big bumps. She could have just taken a couple shit bumps and it would have been fine. In hindsight, this past 2 weeks of SmackDown Women has been, I don't know, I don't want to say underwhelming, but bizarre. Bizarre is a good word, right?
I mean, I agree. Getting back to Lana quickly, though, I mean, I feel like this whole, two-week experiment with her, it just showed how green she still is. Would you agree?
Yeah, but really, like, is she any worse off than Tamina is? Tamina's actually improving. I'm not trying to pick on Tamina, but of everybody on SmackDown Women's roster, Tamina's the easiest one to pick on. If Lana and Tamina had a match, would anybody know it happened? No, unless the boos were that crazy. Lana should not have been put in a position to fail. Lana could have been given the Nia Jax treatment. Remember when Nia got to take on jobbers? That could have helped build up Lana's repertoire. I think, though, they were afraid that Lana was going to get over as a huge face. Have you noticed how hard they've been trying to push Lana as a heel this whole time? When she was getting crazy pops the first 2 to 3 weeks, and now the crowd has already been killed. Like, they've killed the crowd's will already.
They should have known better. I mean, the crowd loves Lana. I mean, let's think back to when everything was going on with Rusev, and nobody liked Rusev. Everybody would chant for Lana. We want Lana. Her as a heel, yes, it's convincing based on how she, her acting, but really crowd reaction, just creatives, they're just failing on so many levels.
Would it have been better for them to have given Rusev and Lana a face run so the crowd could have kind of gotten it out of their system and then had both them turn heel and then... I feel that if you give the crowd a small face run, the crowd kind of can sink their teeth into it. They can have their fun with it. It's kind of like when Jericho finally turned face. We had a nice little small bit of it, and then he went away. And they could have done that, given the fans a little bit of what we wanted, and then turned them back to heel, where they naturally are heels. Both of them are. But if you give the crowd just a little bit, the crowd would have still pops for Lana. Had she been face, the crowd would have gone apeshit for Lana. And that's merchandising opportunities. That's storyline opportunities. It seems kind of like a waste of I mean, let's face it, Lana's one of the most beautiful women WWE's ever had. And now she has this awful gimmick. And more importantly, I wanted to ask you, her attire. It's it's like a one-piece bathing suit, basically. Would you say it's accurate that if you're hot enough, you can still pull it off, or should she have had a different ring attire?
Given how beautiful that woman is, she can pull anything off. Anything. She can come out there.
I wish she would pull a lot of things off her body, but we don't get that.
I mean, she could wear a brown paper bag in that ring and she would look good.
Was it a mistake to give her that attire, though? Like, it's kind of like, you put Cindy Crawford in that and it still looks hot because she's so beautiful. So, is it smart to waste a shitty attire on somebody because they're so beautiful it doesn't matter? Or is it really foolish on WWE's part to not maximize her hotness for, attractiveness, whatever word you want to use?
Maybe they're doing this. They're giving her that outfit to detract from her beauty. Think about the focus now, just as a company, is we want to be the focus to be on the women wrestlers, not, focus on models and actresses and stuff. Like the stuff that, they were focusing on earlier, like in the days of like Kelly Kelly and, Candice Michelle and the Bella Twins, actually. The Bella Twins were not hired for their wrestling ability. They were hired because of their looks.
Hustle, loyalty, respect, man.
I mean, they've improved, but still.
You mentioned Kelly Kelly, and in my, I'm extremely tired right before I went to bed, I was like, I want to download a ringtone to my phone, because I haven't done one. So I got, the Sons of Anarchy theme song, and I'm like, I wonder what happens when I type in WWE. The third thing that came up was Kelly Kelly's awful song, one of the all-time worst theme songs in WWE history, and that was, the third one, I think it was. May have been the fourth. The first one I heard was actually Kane's, and they recorded it so loud that it startled me, which was kind of funny. And Batista and John Cena, those were the top four that I listened to, and I was like, I can't do this anymore. And then I got Kane's anyways, because it's Kane. But yeah, Kelly Kelly, two mentions in the same day. Crazy.
Wow.
Was she also backstage Monday?
I believe so. Her, Christy Hemme, Candice Michelle. Oh gosh, who else? There was a photo floating around. Who else was in there?
Yeah, there's six of them.
Charmel, I think, was also in there.
Yeah, Charmel was there, yeah. God damn it. There was at least one, if not two more. Yeah, it was a reunion of sorts, I guess.
Yeah, L.A. Everybody lives there, apparently. So, anyway, let's talk Raw.
Do we have to?
I don't really want to, considering my opinion on the new, quote-unquote, new number one contender. I gotta go on a rant here. So, Sasha gets picked for number one contender. Where have we seen this before? Didn't we just see this 6 months ago? Is there no...
Over and over again?
Exactly. Is there no originality anymore? Actually, I know the answer to that question. I don't even know why I'm asking it. But you have a very capable roster of women on Raw. You have Mickie James. You have Emma. You have Nia Jax, who basically dominated that entire match. But yet you give it to Sasha. Why? Because... I guess reasons? I don't know. I just think somebody else deserves that spot, and I think Sasha's had her time. What are your thoughts?
We left out Tori Wilson. Yeah. Also, I know we're going to get back to it, but we left out one female on the SmackDown roster, so I hope we go back to her at some point, because she has a great theme song. That's amazing. With that being said, Sasha's had her run. somehow Sasha's still kind of over with the crowd, but I think you and I both believe that if she was heel, she would be able to maximize her potential, as we saw in NXT. I feel like I've seen this before. You know, that's all it is. It's that feeling of having seen it before, and we just saw her and Charlotte. And maybe if they didn't make it historic every other fucking week on Raw for all those matches, maybe this would feel a little bit more fresh. But they dragged that on for, what, 4 to 5 months, it felt like? Maybe even longer, if you think about it. That feud went on forever. So this was an opportunity for them to have given us a fresh number one contender. Whether it was Emma, Alicia, Nia, Mickey, I actually was kind of pulling for Mickey a little bit for something fresh. Alexa versus Mickey would have been, you know, a match that I think would deliver very well. With that being said, and I know we kind of want to talk about it, Nia. Nia did, that was by far her best match. She's still Nia. She's improving. A person that size shouldn't be having matches that go that long, unless you're Samoa Joe or Kevin Owens, basically. She was carried through quite a bit of that match, but she did good. But WWE booking did a poor job. When did we just have... What was the last... Do you remember the last Gauntlet match we had?
I am drawing a blank.
Right. I'll tell you why. Because it was so unmemorable. It was the night Sheamus and Cesaro ran through the whole Raw Tag Team division on the same match. And they kind of replicated that, except they had the last person win instead of the initial person. Gauntlet matches are not good. They don't... I think they kill a division more than they help anybody. Do you agree with that?
I think in both instances, yeah, I would agree with you. I mean, it seemed in both instances that... Well, in the case of the tag team, Cesaro pretty much buried everybody else. And in this case, it was basically like, oh, we have all this talent. But Sasha, you get to bury all of them.
It's, you know, there's a difference between this and, like, a tournament. A tournament makes sense. Like, yes, you're going to have, you know, if you have a 16-person tournament, you're going to have 15 losers, one winner. But you're also going to have multiple winners throughout the night. In a gauntlet match, usually you have anyplace from 4 to 6 participants. Usually that's about the magic number in wrestling. You only have, like, yes, you have people that are winning, but you're also having people that are losing to teams that just had a match or two. And that minimalizes their capabilities. And it really puts them, like, way down on the AA level, if I gotta be honest here. It doesn't help. Like, Dana Brooke got treated like such a little bitch. It was not fair to her. If they wanted to do that, if they don't have faith in Dana, then do something different with Dana. If you wanted to, they could have had Alicia Fox in there, and she could have carried Nia to, well, shit, we saw Nia versus Alicia months ago, and it was kind of entertaining for what it was. Why do that to Dana? Is there any saving Dana?
At this point, that's kind of my question as well. I mean, what do you do with her? It's like she hasn't done anything since she stopped being Charlotte's lackey. It's pretty sad. She's not that bad.
Yeah, she's gone from Emma's lackey to Charlotte's lackey.
She's a good lackey. Maybe we should just say forget it on the in-ring and just make her a manager.
Maybe... It's a shame she's not on SmackDown because she could be in Jinder's posse. I'm not saying she would fit in. I mean, she would look a little odd. But with that being said, it would give her a platform. She has no platform right now. She is seriously the bottom bitch in the Raw division. Would you agree with that?
Oh, yeah. Hands down. She's the only one that could be in that spot.
Like, Alicia's been holding that spot down for quite a while and done a fine job at being underutilized, but Dana has completely wrecked her and is in sole possession of Bottom Bitch. It's not even close. And right now I'm starting to wonder, is Mickey getting drowned a little bit? Because I don't feel that... She had that great triumphant return, right? And then they had this story with her and Bliss on SmackDown, and they kept her in the limelight. And it's just kind of devolved since that storyline. Are they misusing a legend? I mean, for all intents and purposes, Mickie James is a legend, in my opinion.
I mean, in the case of Mickie James, she's an enhancement, almost enhancement talent. She's a legend who can bring up the younger girls and teach them the ins and outs of, you know, women's wrestling. That's one of the reasons they probably brought her back. With that being said, though, that's how she should be utilized. And she's not. I mean, there's so many mistakes in terms of the overall booking of the Raw women's division that I think it's a question that all wrestling fans have right now. Not the casual ones, but the hardcore fans saying, how do we fix these women? I mean, we talked about Bayley last week. And the fact that they completely abandoned her underdog's persona for this sweet and innocent, you know, fan persona. Then you have Sasha, who has no business being a face, who is a really, really great, just swarmy heel. I mean, are they missing the boat? I mean, in the case of Dana Brooke, she's still too green, and she just got brought up too soon, and now they don't know what to do with her, which is the case with a lot of them, but I think there's just so much to fix. I don't know where to begin. Where would you begin?
I just had the idea, because everything you just said described Apollo Crews. Why not have Dana be the newest member of the Titus brand? I mean, Titus right now is getting people over and getting himself over. I think that could be an interesting way to help Dana, perhaps, because we've talked about this. There's a refusal to send them back down to NXT. There's a refusal to acknowledge that we brought somebody up too soon, too fast, whatever. Now that she's there, and the reality is, if she got released tomorrow, would you ever sit there and go on Raw, like watching Raw, and be like, man, I really miss Dana Brooke? No. Nobody in their right mind, possibly Dana's mom, wouldn't even say that, okay? Like, it's sad to say, but it's true. She's just a background, for all intents and purposes. So, I don't know. Why not Titus? Titus is like the reclaimer of lost souls. I'd be intrigued.
I'd have to agree with you there. I mean, Titus is doing some great things. He's doing great things for Apollo Crews. I mean, he got Tozawa a title shot. Why not?
That storyline's been good, yeah.
And, yeah, exactly. And, yeah, let's make Dana Brooke the newest member of the Titus brand. I think that would be good for her. I mean, he hasn't forayed into the women's division yet, and I think it's time for him to do so.
Sure, why not? I thought about this, because like, I kind of touched on it last week regarding Bayley, because I came up with the whole Stephanie McMahon idea. What if, along the same lines for Bayley, another way to rescue her is, every so often, wrestling will use this tired storyline of good person loses, like, bet and match with heel wrestler, and they become like their slave or their bodyguard or whatever, you know, for the next 30 days or however long. And like, it really gets the face over as a sympathetic face. It gets their groove back. Wouldn't that kind of be perfect for somebody like Bayley? Bayley can play that fucking role like nobody else. Like, it's a role built for her. She needs to rebuild the fan, you know, support. I don't know. I'm thinking of heels. Obviously, Bliss would make the most sense. even though we don't want to see Bliss and Bayley again for a bit, I'm kind of drawing blanks here because Nia doesn't have the mic skills to make that work. Bliss does. Bliss being like Bayley's owner for the next, you know, however long, because she, you know, maybe Bliss gives her another title rematch. If you lose, you are my servant for the next however long. Bam. You have a storyline, and then eventually Bayley gets overwhelmed, and she emancipates herself or whatever, and the crowd would go apeshit if done right.
Or we could turn Mickey face. I mean, heel. Let me try that again. Turn her heel, put her in the role that she was brought back to do, and basically fix Bayley. Be like, okay, I'm going to pick on you because you can't get the job done. And if you can't get the job done, you're going to wait on me hand and foot until you do. I think it'd be a
Mickey
good
would be it. Really good. Mickey's a good bitch, heel. Really good. Once again, Mickey may be... Honestly, I want to go back and pick on you a little bit. You had Lita in your top 10. You should have had Mickey. Mickey's more deserving than any other female aside from Trish to be on that list, because I think about all the shit that Mickey's done. I know you weren't watching at the time, but I really wish WWE released like one of their 24 special, like, one of their bullshit documentary type things, because out of anybody that currently is in the company that deserves one, Mickey's right at the top of the list. She was dominant for years, and especially if they would dare talk about her TNA run, she had like a decade of dominance. Really fucking brilliant wrestler. Really good. And if you turn her heel, that's a fine thing. Right now you got Sasha and Bliss holding down the fort. We know we're building up to Nia versus Bliss down the road. That seems like a... I don't know, do you think that's going to be SummerSlam, or do you think that's going to be even later? Because I assume Sasha's Brooklyn. They're probably going to keep Sasha in the title picture, right?
Yeah, they may wait until after SummerSlam, just because all of the history that Sasha has in Brooklyn. But more so Bayley. Bayley's got a lot of history in Brooklyn, too.
If they were really smart, they could switch to the Nia and Bliss thing, have a short match, you know, have some chicken shit heel thing, and have Bayley versus Sasha in like a... Do it again. Do a 30-minute Iron Man match for number one contender. That crowd would eat that shit alive. Just let the girls do what they do best. That's how you make the revolution matter again.
Yeah, do that, and also at the same time turn Sasha heel.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I guess I probably should have said that, but in my head it already happened. But yeah, you're right. You have to do that. I think that's how you revitalize both of those characters in another, and actually in a meaningful way. Like, if you want to keep telling us that stuff's historic and meaningful and that these girls are so great, you have to give us something for... You can't give us one spot and expect us to chant holy shit. Some of the lemmings will, but by and large, they ain't doing holy shit moments anymore. But you go back to the NXT matches, there was some holy shit moments going on there. And it was a thing of beauty. I miss that. I miss liking women's wrestling, to be perfectly honest.
I would have to agree with you. There hasn't been anything to get me excited lately. I mean, except for Carmella.
Poor Eric.
Except for Carmella and the briefcase, in terms of women's wrestling, there's not much for me to get excited about lately.
I agree. Now, what would you do with... I mean, I want to ask you about Alicia and Nia. So you choose. What do you do with either of those two ladies?
Nia, I mean, her chasing the title is inevitable. It's going to happen sooner rather than later. And that's fine. I'm all for it. She's done really well. So let's go Alicia Fox. I really liked what they were doing with her, with the Cruiserweight division. I think that's the role that she should be in now. Just personality-wise, I mean, she could be I mean, she could be someone's basically Maurice, if you think about it. Except a crazy version of Maurice.
Which is awesome. If you think about it, it's really cool. Did they put her with the wrong... They put her with a guy that... Yes, she helped get him over. He was never going to get over on his own. With that being said, he's not a top-level guy. Like, can you really picture Noam Dar with a meaningful title run right now, given the incredible talent in that division? No.
Not at all. I found him, even with her, incredibly dull. I mean...
In-ring, he's bad, yeah.
Oh, in-ring, out-of-ring, just... altogether dull. He's a horrible, it's just an awful package in comparison to everything else in that division.
I mean, they had her tease the whole Cedric thing, and now they can't go back to that well, I don't feel. So who else would you put Foxy with? Like, somebody like Rich Swann don't need it. Neville don't need it. I would propose either a Tony Nese or Drew Gulak, who could really use the help. Or, see, I would say her and Brian Kendrick, I think, would have amazing chemistry together. But I don't think that they really want to push Kendrick anymore based on his age and his role there to kind of help. He's the Mickey James of 205, basically. I'd say Nese. Nese is like this... I don't know if he's a good-looking dude, but he's a physical specimen at the very frickin' least. Why not?
It works. And it also gives her something to do. Because we're not going to see her get another title run. It's unfortunate, but it's true.
And really, if they do something with Dana as far as the Titus brand, Dana could also find herself appearing on 205 along with Tozawa. You could have a little storyline with that going on. There's a lot of possibilities if they want to integrate everything just right. And instead they gave us, what, one cruiserweight match this Monday?
Yeah. And it was very short, if I remember correctly.
Oh, yeah. You mean the night of 3 hours and five matches in which two of them were six-man, one cruiserweight, one Seth versus Kurt Hawkins, which was the best match of the night, and the women's match. That's what we had Monday night. Like, you have 3 hours, and you gave us five matches. Four of them, I don't think, went 10 minutes. That's awful.
Yeah, it was pretty bad. Very, very bad, actually.
Yeah, while it's fresh, I know we're talking about women, but... What the hell was the WWE thinking by putting a live mic in LeVar Ball's hands? I'm just sitting here, I'm wondering, what the hell were they truly thinking? I don't know, did you know who LeVar Ball was prior to this?
I had no clue who the heck those people were. I was just like, why? Who are they? Why should I care? This really goes to my point where I say in the blog, they need to stop putting celebrities on that have no, like, impact on wrestling whatsoever. There was no need for them to be on. I don't feel.
Who was that Josh Dremel actor guy? Do you know who that is?
I don't. Oh, Josh Dumel. He used to be on NBC show Las Vegas. He was in the Transformers movies. He's married to Fergie.
Wow, I hate everything that you just said about him. Wow. Why would you marry Fergie? Even at my most desperate of times, like, I could have gone without getting laid for 10 years and I'd still be like, nah, I'm going to pass on Fergie. That bitch is really one of the most annoying things that's ever existed. So, wow. Alright, yeah, that guy's awful. Like, he needs to get punched in the face repeatedly on a day-to-day basis until he gets his shit together. Wow. So, to give you a little backstory on LeVar Ball, he became famous, I guess? His son became number 2 draft pick in the NBA draft this past last week. He has two other sons. His daddy's LeVar, then there's Shit, I don't even know. The one that got drafted, then there's LaMelo, and then there's another L. They're all fucking L balls. And the daddy is just like this big talker. He's perfect for wrestling in all reality. He then made the claim that he could have beaten Michael Jordan at his physical peak. So, already making headlines on absurdity. He realized he was making headlines. He's like, I see a way to make money. So he kept talking crazy, ridiculous shit. To the point where, like, as he's talking, like, he's smiling and you can tell that he doesn't believe a thing they're saying. But the tabloids and their news, and especially like ESPN, they kept giving this guy more and more FaceTime. And then he created this big baller brand. He wanted Nike, Under Armour, or Adidas to sign his three sons to a $1 billion shoe deal. Billion with a B. They all laughed at him, for obvious reasons. And that gained him more notoriety. And then he came up with this thing called the Big Baller Brand. All three Bs. His first son, Lonzo. Lonzo's his name. Right now they have his signature shoe out. His basketball shoe is going for $495. And a pair of sandals or flip-flops or something is like $270. That's what they're doing. And it's all because this dude has a big mouth.
Oh my gosh, this guy is the male Kris Jenner.
Yeah, he really is. And yet, he kind of fit. For a moment there, did LeVar not seem like he belonged in the wrestling ring in some absurd way with The Miz?
Yeah, I have to give him props. He did cut a good promo. I just couldn't get past, I had no idea who the guy was, and I just didn't care.
Now, did you hear LaMelo say what he said?
I did not, but at that point, I kind of tuned the whole thing out because I thought it was just so ridiculous. But I read about what his son said in articles, you know, yesterday, and I'm like, really? Wow. You don't say that on live TV. You just don't.
He's a young kid and he didn't know better, which says a lot for a lot of different... he's not an exception. A lot of young black dudes say the N-word all the time. Fuck it. They say niggas a lot. They do not drop the proverbial N-bomb. They do the non-offensive N-bomb that white people still aren't allowed to say. But I'm saying it because I listen to too much rap and I don't care anymore. With that being said, I didn't know he said it. All I know is that something bad happened based on what... When Dean came out at such a weird point, and like he seemed almost frazzled as to what to say. And because obviously, as we know now, they sent Dean out early to try to save the segment. And at the time I knew something was up, but I didn't know until like the next day when I read about it. So what a clusterfuck we have there. That was impressive. Who do you think was... Do you think The Miz was, like, sweating it at any point? Or do you think he was chill the whole time?
I mean, he appeared chill, but he was probably like, oh my god, this is tanking. Wow. Why am I involved with this? My career is going so well right now. Why are you asking me, of all people, to do this?
Out of anybody on the roster, though... Especially with Jericho gone, would you have trusted anybody else in that situation?
Nope. That's the sad part. Miz is the only one who could do that, but really, I almost want to say it harmed him.
Oh, yeah, like, that was bad. I'm sitting here trying to think, like, who else could have, like, handled that situation? The Rock is the only other person I think that could have handled that situation, and everybody was smiled about it. I don't even know if the great Paul Heyman could have came out of that unscathed. I think The Rock's the only person that could have pulled that one off and made it into gold somehow.
Yeah, it was pretty bad. And with that said, maybe we should kind of determine whether or not we were entertained by this whole segment, since we have a lot of thoughts on it. I don't think I was. What about you?
I don't know. Like, it's 2 days later and I still don't know. On one hand, like, LeVar was so good on the mic, and then he took his shirt off and he wasn't even in bad shape. And I was like, are we going to get like a LeVar versus Miz match? Which would have been way better than the match we had after that. It was the perfect train wreck, and yet I'm still not entertained. I'm still going to say no, despite all the positive qualities. I can't sit here and be like, yeah, I'm going to watch that ever again. I won't. I have no intentions of it, so no, I was not entertained, sadly. Even though we have not heard the N-word said on TV since, I think Vince McMahon called John Cena my nigga at one point on Raw, like 10 years ago, and then we hadn't heard that since Booker T said, Hulk Hogan, we come for you, nigga. Which was one of the greatest things that ever happened in WCW. You've heard that one, right?
I believe I have.
At some point, I'll try to send you the YouTube. It's hilarious because Booker T's in so... Like, it's Harlem Heat and Sherry. And as soon as he says it, you can see the look on his face like, oh my god, I just said that. And that's what makes it, like... It doesn't matter what he said, it's the fact that he realized it and like his look like, I'm going to get fired. So, whereas Vince was just so cocky as to say it on TV, and I have no idea what the hell was going through his head.
Oh, he's Vince. He doesn't give a fuck. Come on now, it's Vince.
You gotta love people in that regard. Like, people that just don't care. Like, old people. Old people don't care.
This is true. But speaking of people who are train wrecks and don't give a fuck, let's talk about Paige. So,
wow, you swore.
How did I... Yeah, I did. I do it so very rarely. It's such a shock for everyone, listeners, when I do
Yeah,
it.
I just got the shocker from that one. Jeez. All right, go on with Paige.
So, a few things, a few updates on Paige. Apparently, she's starting to train to get back in the ring. Big news broke over the weekend that her and Del Rio broke up. Did you hear this one?
Yeah. I think I messaged you and Russ as soon as I read about it, and I was very crestfallen. I'm happy for Paige's health, because she may not get murdered now, so that's a plus. Del Rio may not end up killing somebody, so that's a plus. I think everybody benefits from this car wreck. You know, people may have had a few broken legs and bruises, but everybody walks away with their life.
But I think the...
Oh, go on.
I was going to say the million-dollar question is there going to be another sex tape?
Oh, gosh. I hope so, but... All right. We're going to pretend that you're famous, you're a celebrity, and you know, you're boinking some dude, and it gets filmed, and it gets released. At that point in your future ever, would you ever consent to being filmed? Even if it was like your husband, would you ever get consent to it ever again?
Probably not.
Like that's my thought. It's different than like a nude photo. Like I get it. You get, you know, it gets leaked, whatever. I mean, it's a picture. Yeah, there's pervs like me that are just going to go and look and ogle, but it's just a picture. I feel that there's a huge difference between a picture of your tits getting leaked and a video of somebody jizzing on your tits. Just my thoughts on that. So I don't think we're going to have an issue with Paige moving forward. I'm going to even go on to say that Paige has a good career. I'm going to even go even further and say that Paige is the missing piece to the puzzle on SmackDown.
So you wouldn't put her back on Raw?
I wouldn't, only because Sasha needs a heel turn. Nia should never really be face, and Bliss isn't ready for face. You have three strong women all at the top of the food chain, all better as heels than faces. Whereas SmackDown, aside from Carmella, you don't have... Like, Charlotte we know is better as a heel, but they seemed hell-bound keeping her as a face. Becky as a heel really wasn't that great, even on NXT, I didn't think. She's a natural face. Keep her as a face for now. Natalya can switch hit. Tamina just doesn't matter. So, I don't know. I think Paige is the right choice over there. I think Paige versus Becky Lynch could be a really good match, as a matter of fact, given time.
I want to say that match has happened in the past. But then I remembered that Becky Lynch was only a valet for Paige and her mom when Paige was still in the indies.
Wait, what?
So when Paige was still in Shimmer, Becky Lynch was wrestling under the name Rebecca Quinn, which is actually her real name. And she had a back injury or something like that. She was a valet for Paige and her mom. Because her mom also wrestles.
See, this is what you bring to the table. Useless knowledge that nobody else knew. But now we're educating people, and that's fantastic. Because I had no idea. I only knew Becky... did you watch Becky in her early days in NXT?
I did, and I wasn't really blown away by her.
Very underwhelming in NXT. Like, it took her almost a full year before she kind of came into her own. Once she came into her own, she became really good, but I almost feel like she was one of those people that either the bookers said, no, we're gonna hold you back. Kind of like, you know, they held back Finn Balor in matches, let's face it, they did. Or it was a moment where suddenly the light switch flipped on for Becky, and all of a sudden, like, she put everything together. Because we've seen that for wrestlers when Baron Corbin, at some point last year, the light switch went on, and all of a sudden he became good. It happens sometimes, and for other people, it just never clicks. So, Paige and Becky, I think, is money. Paige and Charlotte, although I'm pretty sure that happened, right?
Yeah, like that's, when it was PCB.
I still think that's a good match. And I think Paige can match up with everybody there, except for her and Carmella probably isn't a good matchup. But if they're both heels, don't need it. But would you bring Paige back as a heel or face? Because she's going to get a face reaction initially, right?
I believe she will. I mean, in the case of Paige, she's a pretty good switch hitter. She can do both. And she can do both well.
I would say that's one of her biggest talents. How many other women can you really say can play is good, just as good? I would say Mickey.
Yep.
I've already, like, that's it. That's all I have for women that can pull off both. Although Asuka is showing me she can do both. That's it, though. That's the short list.
Yeah, I really need to catch up on my heel Asuka watching. Speaking of that, let's talk NXT women quickly. Maybe you can educate me and update me. I know not much has changed. Asuka's still on top. Everybody else is still, you know, where they are. But what are your thoughts on the division? You know, Asuka moving up and stuff like that.
Right now, they're giving Billie Kay and Peyton Royce a good gimmick, the iconic duo. And they're having, like, some backstage vignettes, especially, like, in the gym, and they'll be talking shit about somebody, and then they'll walk by, or, like, they were making fun of Ember Moon, and then Ember Moon got her clearance, and they're like, oh! It was classic booking, but it still worked. So those two are really coming into their own on the mic. In-ring, they're both very good, as is. They really should be up on the main roster some point. End of the year, by spring of next year at the very least. They're both ready. Ember Moon, she is ready in-ring. I'm just not sure about her mic skills. And I'm not necessarily sure if she needs mic skills. It's not like women get a ton of time on the mic anyways, so it's not as important for a woman to have as good mic skills. Although those that are great make a killing, you know, and then there's, I'm talking really loud with my emotions. So, yeah, that just goes to show you can get pushed to the fucking sky and not be able to cut a promo, save your life. Nikki Cross, I think she's the future. I love that girl. I think she has such a bright future. I love crazy bitches. What can I say? I am that guy. So, I like the fact that she's not super thin. She's not chubby or anything, but she's got a little thickness, and I like that. Guys do like some thicker girls, and like it's kind of nice to not see everybody be a fucking Barbie doll. So I think she's going to be huge when she gets called up. Ruby Riott needs time, and Asuka's been ready. Asuka's like the best, worst kept secret in wrestling. Like, they've just kind of keeping her down there. With that being said, and we talked about this briefly before we went on air, I don't know what the fuck you want to call it, Asuka has become Goldberg during the streak. And even if you're not watching it, I will ask, does Asuka having this undefeated streak help her or not? And does it help or hurt the division while basically trying to prepare these girls for the next step?
Honestly, I feel it does nothing for her, and it hurts all the girls that are currently in NXT. I mean, basically, you have Asuka, who's an unbeatable woman, who just really just keeps going and going, and you know she's ready for the main roster, but they don't want to pull the trigger. So, I mean, that's hurting her, but at the same time, it's not really doing anything bad, good or bad for her, if that makes sense. But really, I just think it's hurting their developmental division. Because none of those girls are getting the opportunity to shine and really showcase themselves above and beyond what they're currently doing.
I'll go so far as to say it kind of reminds me of like the situation of Ty Dillinger. I really insisted on them giving him a title run prior to getting called up. That didn't happen. I felt it was necessary for Ty to have had a title run to get that in his system before getting called up. For the women, it's even more important because most NXT takeovers only has one women's match, and that always features the champion, which means that Asuka's getting all this exposure to have these nice long matches that we applaud takeovers for having. Well, you gotta kind of spread the wealth a little bit then. And I know they've tried some multi-women matches and whatnot, but that's not the same. Like, Asuka's getting all this extra experience that neither of us really thinks that she needs. Whereas a lot of these other girls could use that 15-minute match platform on a takeover to try to get over with people who may not watch it weekly, but definitely tune in for the takeovers. That would really help. So her being champion is hurting the division. There's no doubt about that. And I don't think this long title reign is helping her in any way. Let's go back to everybody else that's been called up. When has being good in NXT really helped you on the main roster? It's like they acknowledge you were there, and then they quickly forget any of your achievements there. You know what I mean? Like, Joe was a big deal, and Joe suddenly wasn't a big deal. Finn wasn't there long, wasn't on the main roster long enough before injury. Fucking the Ascension. Bo Dallas. Neville. The list of fuck-ups is long and arduous. So, I think they're just wasting their time on this whole Asuka thing. I know Triple H is like, yeah, we're making this lady into like the biggest star we've ever created. And he's right. Except when she goes to the main roster, they're not going to run with his creation. They're just going to fuck it up. So it's kind of like Triple H is doing the right thing, but it won't end up with the right product. That sucks, unfortunately, because Asuka has potential to be the next big thing in all of wrestling, not just women's wrestling. She could be the legitimate face of a revolution. She's that good. She is really good.
So basically, I mean, we have the next, the third installment of TakeOver Brooklyn coming up. Do you say she drops the title, debuts the next night on Raw or SmackDown, and just we call it? I mean, it's time. The record's been broken. There's no point in keeping her down there at this point.
Do you know, like, when we're doing the Mae Young Classic? By any chance? Like, what month?
I want to say next month or August. Not 100% sure.
If WWE was smart, which is a leap of faith, but I would say make the winner of the Mae Young Classic, get the title match against Asuka, have Asuka job at Brooklyn, you've made a new fucking star. Now, granted, it's insulting to the Ember Moons, the Billy Kays, the Paytons, and all that, but you've made a new star, and then they can feud with those ladies, and it helps everybody involved, basically. It's like the Wild West. Suddenly, you know, the sheriff is dead. Everybody's going to be gunning for the top to be the top person. That works in a lot of ways. Plus, it gives instant credibility to somebody. And I don't know anything about these two Asian ladies, but I've heard enough positive things that I'm actually excited about it. Like, do you think that they would two Asian ladies going at it? Do you think that makes the most sense?
I mean, it's worked in other promotions, so I think it'll be fine. I mean, I'm sure New Japan probably has women wrestlers. There's been previous women's pro wrestling promotions, which, you know, it can happen. It will work. I mean, there's a whole TV series based on, you know, a women's wrestling promotion. For those of you listeners who don't...
Are we going to talk about that?
We are with the... Because I've seen it. I think you've seen it. For our listeners, we're going to start talking about GLOW. If you have not watched the show yet, spoiler alert, and you might want to fast forward through this next few minutes.
Is there really much to spoil, though? I mean, in all fairness, you know... Seriously, you watched it. You know that's based on a federation. You know what how the last episode's going to end. Based on... Like, you just know. Going into it, this is one of those shows that you know the story. You're just intrigued on how they're going to play it and how the characters are going to be. Is that fair?
Yeah, I mean, if you've done any research on the gorgeous ladies of wrestling, you know how everything plays out. I think the spoilery part of this whole thing is the cameos that were in this movie.
Do tell of the cameos.
Well, let's see. Episode one, we start out with Johnny Morrison Nitro Mundo.
Johnny Abs for Russ.
Yes, Johnny Abs for Russ. Russ's ultimate man crush.
Hey, what was his character's name? It was like Salty or Sack or something.
Something sad. I don't remember. I know there was a sack involved.
There was a sack involved. And it was. He's in great... Like, he looked very muscular in his appearance. Like, way more muscular than I had last seen him. I mean, granted, he's probably been that way in Lucha, but I hadn't seen him that muscular in a while, so he looked really good.
Yeah, he pretty much looks like he has on all the seasons of Lucha Underground thus far. So there was him, and then I don't know if you noticed the two brothers. Well, one of them was very obvious. One was Brodus Clay.
The other one, I was like, fuck, who is that guy? I actually looked it up. I fully admit, and I'm like ashamed that I didn't know who it was.
I didn't know who it was either, but then I looked it up, saw that it was Carlito, told Eric when I got home from work yesterday, and he's like, holy crap, I thought that was him, but I wasn't sure because he was too jacked.
He was so jacked, I didn't... That's why, like, I'm like, in the face, in the hair, it's Carlito. But the body did not resemble anything I'd ever seen of Carlito. And I was like, holy shit, that is great.
And let's see, then there was Alex Riley.
And he had a good role, really. Like, seeing him in that role actually made me think WWE really kind of dropped the ball with him. I'm just saying that.
Yeah, they did, but then again, his whole downfall was more Cena-related than anything.
Agreed.
And then we have to talk about who he was wrestling. That was Joey Ryan, wasn't it?
Joey Ryan is the one of the... I can say Joey Ryan is one of the five guys that WWE completely missed the boat on. That dude was so fucking entertaining when he was in TNA. Oh my god. And he's like bulked up and everything, but his hair is still amazing. The dude's always had amazing hair, so I was so happy to see him.
He's actually on Lucha Underground now. It's like an undercover, like, detective. His role may have changed the last time I was watching. He was an undercover detective who sucks on a lollipop. When he goes to wrestle, he puts a lollipop down his shorts. It's fantastic.
Everything you're saying is amazing to me, so...
Who else was there? And then the match before that was... Yep. Christopher Daniels and Frankie Kazarian.
Which, I was like, I couldn't figure out that it was Kazarian, and then, like, once I read it, I'm like, really, Kat, you didn't figure out that Christopher Daniels and Kazarian would do a match together on this show? Like, I felt so dumb. I knew Christopher Daniels immediately, but Kaz, I just didn't pick up on. My bad.
But I think the most shocking cameo, and the one that I didn't recognize until I looked it up, occurred in the episode when they went to look at the venue, that first venue for the live show. Did you know who that was?
The
lady who was showing them the venue?
No, I have no idea.
That was Brooke Hogan.
The fuck?
I'm not kidding. That was Brooke Hogan.
Wow, I never even thought she was somebody that I should know, so I didn't look it up. Wow. I just saw this, like, less than 24 hours ago, so it's still fresh in my mind. Wow, interesting. Hey, Hulk Hogan appeared in taped footage.
That's true. And Karma actually starred in it. She was the welfare queen.
That was Karma?
That was Karma.
Wow, I didn't realize Karma could talk that well. I know her for, as Awesome Kong, and she was amazing as Awesome Kong, and then her Karma run was... It was really good for what it was, but it was so short-lived, it was bothersome. Wow, okay. Once again, there... Same place as Joey Ryan. Missed opportunity. That lady was so much money. She was amazing, and she's awesome in her role. One thing, so this kind of bothered me a little bit. As I'm watching, I'm like, I don't remember any of these characters, and come find out the characters were fake. Why, do you know why they did that? Why they didn't just, like, have the same character names? They clearly have some kind of rights to Glow. Why did they make fake characters?
Maybe the only thing I can think of is this was a TV show inspired by kind of a situation where they're not going to use the exact names, exact situations, but kind of, you know, tell the story, but not the true life, you know, documentary story.
So they basically pulled a Hollywood move and was like, this is based on a true story, but all the names are different type thing.
Yeah, pretty much.
All right, my biggest disappointment with the show was never getting to see Big Bad Mama. Because that lady was one of my all-time favorite wrestlers. And she was even on Married with Children for an episode. What I did do, and I can tell you... Alright, so did you ever watch the documentary, the Glow documentary that's also on Netflix?
I have not.
Alright, now that you've seen the season, if you get chance, watch the documentary. It's not terribly long. You will piece together every last bit of everything you saw on this season of GLOW from that documentary. Basically, Jenji Cohen, if that's how you pronounce her name, basically must have watched that documentary and was like, oh, I can make a TV show out of that, took notes, and then just made the show from that documentary. I'm not saying she ripped anything off, but if you watch it, you can see piece by piece by piece everything that she took from it and created her as her own. Which I'm not criticizing that. I'm just saying, once I saw the documentary, I'm like, wow, everything discussed in the documentary was shown on the TV show. And one thing I can say for the writer, she has a really good way of making characters. Stories aren't always the greatest, but characters always makes really good characters. And Mark Maron's character, I can't think what his character's name was. He was probably the funniest character in the whole thing, but he was really good in it. I really liked Sheila. Sheila entertained me quite a bit. But on the flip side, Genji also has a horrible way of always trying to include some bullshit romantic storyline, usually with a relationship that's not working, i.e. Piper and Fuckhead in Orange is New Black. And I felt the season would have been better without that storyline. I know that the whole thing was trying to like build up like this whole forgiveness thing between the two main girls, and that was like this huge overarching storyline. But do you feel that was needed?
Not at all. It was kind of a situation where, I mean, if you've watched Orange is the New Black, obviously, it was kind of a Jason Biggs situation.
It's exactly the same thing.
I did not like that guy, and I didn't like Jason Biggs' character at all. I was like, this is pointless. Why is this here? I mean, Jason Biggs' character in Orange is the New Black made a little more sense than this guy, but it was just stupid. So stupid. So pointless.
I don't know how to say this other than I think the writer really dislikes men because most of her male characters are dicks. And yes, most men are dicks to an extent, but like, she makes almost all of her male characters into huge dicks. Which is entertaining to an extent, but like, the husband in GLOW, he was just like this. What was the point? Like, he wasn't rational in any way. There was no sense. It was like, oh, divorce. No, not divorce. Let's get back together. Oh, I'm going to insult what you really like. Oh, you're mad at me? The fuck, man? Like, none of that made sense to me. So, that's my biggest issue I had with the show was that story arc. But I loved, you know, Melrose. I thought Melrose was like a perfect character, remind me of Nichols from Orange is the New Black. Would you say that's a fair comparison?
Yeah, definitely.
And I love the storyline of the big girl who was supposed to be Mount Fuji. I can't think of her name. The big girl with the brothers and the wrestling family.
Oh, Machu Picchu.
Machu Picchu. I thought her whole storyline was really good and well written. I loved that. And the main chick was fine, Annie from Community. And we got to see her tits, which, hooray for us.
Yeah, I think you and a lot of the guys on the internet are just so happy about that, those few scenes.
Yeah, let's face it. I mean, it was a happy moment for all of us, internet nerds, so hooray. Do you think it's getting a second season?
I think so. I mean, this season was good. I mean, for a non-wrestling fan, I don't know how much they would have enjoyed it, but I know us wrestling fans enjoyed it.
Yeah, I'm like hesitant to recommend it. I have a group of girls that I do Orange is New Black, you know, blogs with, and I'm very hesitant to recommend it to most of them because most of them are not wrestling fans, and I'm just not sure. It's nowhere near as funny as Orange is New Black. If you're looking for humor, you're going to get a little bit of humor, but I mean, I didn't laugh all that much. I laughed at a few, you know, maybe once an episode or something like that. But it's character driven. It was a very good character driven show, and I highly recommend watching this show before watching the documentary. I think you'll get more satisfaction than if you did it vice versa. I feel if you watch a documentary, you're just going to be like, well, this show sucks. Quite frankly, I think that's how people may view it. I loved the show. When I was a kid, I watched it. I look online, it's, you can buy some stuff from Amazon, but it's like the best of. You can't just get the seasons, and I'm still left wondering why, and B, if Netflix has all these rights, like they have the documentary, they have the show, why do they not have the wrestling itself? Doesn't seem like that should be part of the deal.
Maybe they're working on it. I mean, it took them a while to get Lucha Underground.
Fair enough. WWE doesn't own the Glow rights, correct?
Not that I'm aware of.
So somebody's holding on to Glow rights, and they can't be all that valuable. I'm wondering if they're kind of stingy, though, about it, because if they weren't, you would imagine WWE would have bought it by now.
Probably.
You know what I mean? So, like, they're probably asking for too much, whoever owns it. So, yeah. One thing in the documentary I will say, it upset me, is the girls, the wrestlers, aside from, like, Ivory and a couple others, like, they were really oblivious to, you know, what's happening nowadays. Like, one's like, yeah, as far as I know, we're still the only all-female wrestling federation that ever existed. And I'm sitting there thinking, wow, that's kind of self-absorbed. So you've never heard of Shimmer. And I believe there's at least one or two other all-women wrestling federations. And I'm sitting there thinking, you're kind of just in it for yourself to kind of talk about yourself. You never kept up to, like, give back to the sport, whatever you want to call it. So, and granted, these girls were just, you know, young actresses, 20 to 25 years old, just looking for a job. They weren't there to be athletes. But still, once you've done that for 4 years, wouldn't you think you would kind of keep up on the scene a little bit? Like, you were pioneers of this thing. I don't know. I feel like they should have kept up on it. I'm really surprised that, like, they didn't go back on the wrestling scene, like, as general managers for Shimmer or, you know, managers or something like that. I feel it's just a huge missed opportunity for them because they were so good back then.
Yeah, I'd have to agree with you there. I mean, you're part of basically women's wrestling history. You think you'd want to keep up on it. Especially because
that's why WWE doesn't own it.
It's not historic or first time ever or second time ever. Somewhere Eric's drinking his soda right now.
WWE didn't create the historicness, so they don't own it. If WWE doesn't own it, it didn't happen.
Exactly. That's kind of how they feel about TNA.
Oh, God, that's how everybody feels. So come find out the pay-per-view's this Sunday. I don't know, I thought it was like last Wednesday for some reason, but I misread something. Anyways, it's this Sunday. I'm eventually going to try to watch on Bali Rules. Bali Rules is great for anything that you miss. You know, if you miss Raw or SmackDown, you can go there and get things, just have an ad blocker. I think it's BaliRules.me, but it could be BaliRules.tv. But if you type in Bali Rules, you'll find it. Rules with a Z, like the Hardy Boys. So if you want to catch up on that stuff. Even Ring of Honor and all that stuff. Any wrestling, it's good sight. Now, I know we still haven't talked about one female. We're still missing out on one female. And she has a great entrance song. And she has the greatest love of them all.
Maria.
What? I'm in love with that song. I just want to say that I've actually been listening to the song. I downloaded the song. It's amazing that the same people that made Samoa Joe's song and Finn Balor's song and Sasha's song made this song. It blows my mind. What are your thoughts?
I like it. It's catchy. It's really good. Fits them pretty well and the characters that they're trying to portray. It's just really well done. I just hope they don't screw everything up with those two.
So, which kind of, this kind of leads to the men, but obviously it made zero sense for Sammy to just interrupt. Like, if Sammy's supposed to be a face, wasn't that like one of the bigger dick moves? Like, wasn't that just the total dick move?
Yeah, I mean, you would think that somebody like Baron would, you know, interrupt. Be like, okay, guys, get out of here. I don't care. Love sucks, or something like that.
Right. Like, if Kevin Owens would have interrupted, it would have made all the sense in the world, because Kevin Owens just don't care. But for Sami Zayn, this lovable guy, I mean, we're talking about, like, Roman shoving Lana into her wedding cake level of dicketry here. It didn't make sense. It didn't fit with Sami's character in any way.
But then again, you gotta remember, that's how WWE books. They did it with Roman and Rusev. They're probably gonna do it with Sammy and Mike Bennett. I'm sorry, Mike Kanellis. It's just the way they book. Faces are actually heels. Heels are actually faces. It's so backwards, twisted, and makes my head hurt.
All right. I know we might talk about a couple other things, but this is where I want to launch into my conspiracy theory. Did you read my conspiracy theory in the blog?
I did not.
Okay. My conspiracy theory is that WWE realized how much they pissed off women two Sundays ago. So this week, they decided to put women front and center. Notice, both main events of both shows were like half-hour long women's matches. Also note that not a single match that I don't think a single match went over 10 minutes for any of the men's matches this week. My conspiracy theory then suggests this was all intentional to book the men like shit to put the prominence back on women to try to get back in the good graces of those whiny assholes that complained about James Ellsworth. That's my conspiracy theory, because there's anything else doesn't make sense that they booked the men this bad this week. It was on both shows. Like, that Hype Bros match, they come back from commercial break and under 30 seconds later, the match is over. Why not just have the match and then have the commercial break after the fact? My mind was blown by this. What do you think?
Oh, that commercial break, that was bad. I mean, they came back, match ended, I said to Eric, that was it? He's like, they just came back from commercial break. And then we went and finished playing with the dog.
Like, wouldn't you have expected they shouldn't have done that? Like, the Hype Bros first match against the Usos was a time to build on whatever they're going to with the Hype Bros as far as the storyline. Instead of just like this bullshit ending. Like, there was no story told. Instead, they were just in a rush to bust their nut with the New Day stuff, which, quite frankly, wasn't all that entertaining. I'd much rather just had the match go longer and no New Day for the week. I feel that Hype Bros storyline's going to get really botched.
Oh, it already has. I mean, you think about it. They had the perfect thing, you know, Ryder coming back, blah, blah, blah. Dissension between the two guys. They were aiming to break them up, and then they completely dropped the ball on that. They're like, no, we're going to stay together. We're going to be friends, blah, blah, blah. Again, WWE booking making my head hurt.
Another thing that also made my head hurt. Randy botching his promo, only to have Jinder botch his promo. But even more so bothersome was Aiden English came out, and they go to commercial, and then they did a bunch of cool shit with Aiden during the commercial, only to come back, hey, this is what you just missed. Well, fuckheads, if you guys would have just waited a few minutes, we could have just seen this rather than have to watch what just happened. Like, what sense does that make to do it during a commercial, only to show it to us when you come back?
I think the production guy and the production man was going, let's go to commercial. I think he was just getting commercial happy at this point.
I think there was some bets, some drinks going on in the production, and they were just like, let's see what we can do. No, you're not going to possibly go to commercial right now. Oh, yeah? I will. Like, that's why the conspiracy theory exists, because they went to commercial at the weirdest times during a lot of stuff, both last night and Monday night. It just felt unsettling to me in a weird way. And are they leaning towards Baron versus Shinsuke? Is that what you're getting out of it?
That's kind of what I suspect. I don't know how I feel about it, though. I mean, it makes some sense, but really no sense at the same time.
I thought about this for like 5 minutes last night. I'm not even joking. I don't know why. But like, I wrote the question that I got thinking about. I'm like, I don't even know how to answer my own question. Because stylistically speaking, those two couldn't be further apart. Like, very far apart. But then I got thinking about it. I get the feeling that Corbin's a kind of almost like a JBL type guy. He doesn't mind getting hit because he'll hit you back hard. Shinsuke comes from the strong style. I think we may not get the most technically sound matches, but I think we're going to get some hard-hitting matches from these two that could prove to be entertaining or could be a waste of time. It could go either way. But I'm kind of excited to see. This is going to be one of the first times we've gotten to see Baron work with something. Like, he worked with AJ and Sammy and Dolph. All those guys kind of are similar. He hasn't worked with a guy like Shinsuke. So it'll be interesting to see how he adapts. And, you know, so far Baron's shown us that he's capable of adapting quite well, I feel. I'm intrigued.
We'll see what happens. That's a safe way to... I think it's a safe way to approach it.
I agree. Did we want to touch on the fact that Joe choked out Brock? Because, I mean, really, that was probably my highlight of the week for Raw.
I enjoyed that. Yeah, let's talk Raw. Big men, why don't we? I mean, we had a question on the blog at 9news.com/wrestling regarding the booking of Raw big men. Let's touch on that a bit. I mean, for me, watching Joe choke out Brock was great. I love how he's being booked right now. He's being booked so strong, especially against someone like Brock, who, quite frankly, not everyone gets strong booking against. As for the other two, I mean, Braun, it's the same feud that he had before he got injured, so we're not really seeing anything new there. I mean, he's still entertaining as hell, but I'm going to get bored.
That toss was great, though.
Oh.
That's the only thing I got to say, that toss was amazing. I know it upset you because you love Roman so much, but...
I'm telling you, the longer and longer this feud goes on, the more concerned I get for Roman's health.
I agree, and yet the more I'm seeing dollar signs for Braun. That crowd is getting louder and louder every week for Braun. Do you think the WWE is acknowledging this backstage and like wondering if they should capitalize on this, or do you think they're ignoring the crowd reaction like they typically do?
Well, I mean, if they're smart, which we know they're not, they'll capitalize on this. But why? I just see him jobbing to Roman, which, of course, in my mind, that wouldn't bother me at all because, you know, how I feel about Roman. But then again, Braun has really, really impressed me. He entertains me week after week. I mean, he's almost getting to the point where he's must-see Raw TV.
He's the most must-see thing currently in wrestling. When a Braun segment comes on, I stop what I'm doing. So I agree with you.
And then there's the flip side of the coin. The we really don't care, why are we watching this Enzo and Cass breakup? I just don't care anymore. How do you feel about it?
I felt that it dragged on and on to, like, this obvious point of, like, had they just kind of... There's, like, this happy middle ground. If it was too short, it was obvious that it was going to be Cass playing him. If it went on too long, which is the route they took, Cass was playing him. If they could have had, like, a quick, you know, heart-to-heart for, like, a minute, and maybe had a tag match after that, and they worked really well together, picked up a win, we'll say, against Gallus and Anderson, because that's a match we've never seen before. Great! But they just took so long with it, and it was very painful. I wanted to fast-forward through it. Enzo's trying his best to be sympathetic, but he's not that sympathetic. I'm struggling to find sympathy for him. Do you find him sympathetic in this case at all?
No, not really. I mean, I think I speak for almost everyone where even trying to act sympathetic, we still want to punch him in his face.
I will admit, and I know this was utterly ignorant, but when they were having their big talk, I was still hoping the Revival was going to come out, and they were going to have a match, and then Enzo was going to turn on Cass. I was like, that would have been the greatest, that could have been such a fascinating twist of events. Like, M. Night Shyamalan would have been fucking jealous of that shit. But no, they went the obvious route, and we still don't have any Revival matches. We're not going hard. And that disappoints me.
And we need to go hard. Speaking of hard, let's go back to Joe for a moment. I mean, just given the build and everything, the storyline with him and Brock, I mean, are we setting, we're really setting ourselves up for a letdown, aren't we?
We are. And, you know, I meant to mention this way back in the first segment, but the commentators didn't say anything, and I really felt that they should have said that Becky Lynch was taking everybody to Suplex City. How many exploding suplexes did she have? Like, that was a really good opportunity for them, and they blew it. I'm just saying, because I was like, she's Brock Lesnar-ing this shit right now. This build-up is one of the best, if not the best, booking that we've seen. It's right up there with the initial Wyatt family and Randy Orton stuff, which died. You know, it just crumbled at our feet. With that being said, this is so good right now. And when the match happens, I know I'm going to be excited and I know I'm going to be let down. Like, this is the life of being a wrestling fan. We're getting our high right now, but when the drug wears off and we have the match, we are going to hit such a rock bottom. It's going to be painful to us, I feel. On the plus side, I've been saying this for the past 3 weeks. I really genuinely think that Brock Lesnar is enjoying this feud. You can tell when Brock's enjoying something. Brock has a different... Brock's more willing to do things. Like, he really liked working with Goldberg. He did not like working with Dean. Brock liked working with Taker. You could see that. I don't really necessarily know if he really enjoyed working with Triple H, but he liked working with Cena. And based on that, you can see how much Brock is willing to take of their offense. That's been a longtime theory of mine. He actually liked working with Big Show. I think Brock's going to allow a match longer. I want to say longer than 10 minutes. I think we're going to get one of the better Haas matches we're going to get this whole year. It's not going to be technically brilliant, but I think it's going to be entertaining for a bit until we get the inevitable. And I'm okay with the inevitable. I'm okay with Joe losing as long as he puts up a fight. I think that's all we could have asked for when Joe first won that historic first time ever five person fuckery match. Right? Like, that's... Isn't that all we could have asked for?
Yeah.
Is, like, a competitive?
I mean, I think it's gonna probably be one of the matches of the night. Actually, thinking about the card, that's probably gonna be match of the night.
Oh, well, I'm trying to think, like, other matches, and... I mean, not to jump away from Joe and Brock, but... I don't get the Seth and Bray thing. what are they doing with this feud? Like, have I been tuning out? Like, has any progress been made? I don't know.
This is the, I would say, is the most poorly booked storyline feud I've ever seen. And I've been watching wrestling for not as long as you, but in my years, I have not. Yeah, this is just really bad.
Yeah, I don't get it. It's like nonsensical to me. The only Seth Rollins things I've been paying attention to was the commercial for the video game, and that didn't even make sense to me. Like, I still don't get the point of that video. Let's show no game footage, and let's just have Seth pull Bart Simpson and knock a head off of a statue. Okay. Yeah, pre-order WWE 2K18 because you can be Rollins and... Like, are you going to be Seth Rollins and have, like, a GTA-type game? Is that what WWE 2K18 is? Because that's what the commercial told me. It didn't tell me anything about wrestling matches.
It's funny you mentioned that, because last night they kept saying, oh, it's a first look at, you know, WWE 2K18. And Eric keeps yelling at the TV. He's like, it's not a first look if I don't see game footage. Dang it.
It's true. It's we know nothing. And I don't know, actually, what's worse, that commercial or the Bray and Seth feud, because I don't know what they're fighting over. I don't know what this is all about. I'm really confused by the whole thing, and fuck it, I'm just going to say this, I'll go on record. The Goldust and R-Truth feud is way better than Bray versus Seth. In 2017, those words should not be said. But at least their storyline, like, yeah, the match didn't happen. Nobody expected the match to happen. Goldust has, like, this film operator, I think they kept calling him. I'm at least intrigued a little bit by this. Like, I don't know. It's not that bad, is it? For filler?
Oh, no. The storyline's been fantastic. You know, their vignettes have been fantastic. In-ring confrontation this week, kind of underwhelming, but to be expected. No, it's definitely a better build than Bray Wyatt versus Seth Rollins. It just doesn't make any sense. Now, not Seth and Finn Balor, but Bray Wyatt and Finn Balor could have been good. And that's the direction they should have gone.
What's Finn doing? What is Finn doing? Is he really feuding with Elias?
That's what it looks like, and I'm okay with that. I just don't know how it benefits. I mean, it benefits Elias more than it benefits Finn. And if you want Finn to be booked as one of the top guys, you're going to have to bury Elias, but you don't want to do that either. It's just, again, WWE booking making your head hurt. That should be our theme of the night.
It should, like, basically, I was going to say everything you just said. It makes no sense. Finn needs to be one of your top guys. Elias should be slowly groomed to see what he has. You don't put him against one of the top guys unless you plan on putting him over one of the top guys, but as a top guy that's still returning to form, it's mind-boggling. In a weird way, they'd be better off combining the Seth and Bray with Finn and Elias and maybe get some tag matches out of it, have like a four-way or something. Do something and maybe like make the winner the number one contender for the Intercontinental title. That's what I would do for Great Balls of Fire. It would add a little intrigue to these feuds that may or may not exist. At least it'd be top guys.
I could get behind that. It's anything's better than what they're currently doing. Because really, I cringe when I watch Raw now. I mean, we've been doing cringing for a while, but I'm really cringing lately.
Alright, so prior to Raw, I mean, I woke up and I was just like, I don't want to watch Raw. And I had a talk, and I remember I was just like, I just don't want to watch Raw. Like, I said, I don't want to watch wrestling tonight. I'm kind of sick of everything that they're doing, and I don't feel like it. Then I'm like, I got the blog, I got the podcast, I need to know, I need to be informed at the very least to have my, speak my piece. So I forced myself to do it. I didn't feel good at the end of it. Like, I felt like shit for a good 90 minutes of it. It was bad. And it shouldn't be this bad. It really shouldn't. But they have all this talent. We agree, this is one of the most stacked rosters, and they can't put on a good show, and it's painful to watch at this point. Roman and Braun need to move on. Like, July should end almost all feuds, except for Goldust and Truth. That can keep going. Everything else really kind of needs to... There needs to be a reset button. Because Cesaro versus the Hardy Boys, I thought that stuff was done, but they're still going with it. I don't get that either. Why is that still happening? Do you have any idea?
I don't know, and I want it to stop. I really can't watch them wrestle anymore. It's like watching, well, Sheamus and Randy Orton. That's
agreed.
That's exactly where we are getting into that territory where people are going to start doing the wave and doing random chants during their matches if this doesn't stop.
And, you know, it'd be fine. Like, the Hardy Boys put over Cesaro. That's great. But now it's not helping. These guys need a... The tag team division in general needs feuds, storylines, and direction. We don't have any of those three things. Aside from Hardy Boys and Cesaro, which I guess is technically a feud. I don't know what's going on in the tag team division. I feel completely uninformed. And there are days where I may not even remember that Cesaro is the tag team champions. Because they don't get to act like champions. If you don't get to act like a champion, like, The Miz comes out, he acts like a fucking champion. You know what I mean? Cesaro, they had a perfect opportunity with Elias Samson. Like, I felt that they could have really lit the crowd up if Cesaro and Sheamus would have, like, sang a few parts. I think that would have been really entertaining, and it wouldn't have detracted any bit. But they didn't go that route. And then they had that boring-as-hell match. Somehow, despite all the talent, Raw still continues to underwhelm me somehow more than SmackDown. I don't get it anymore. I don't get it. It's so weird, and as long as I've been watching wrestling, they are really slowly breaking my will to continue to watch wrestling. I'm really... Had it not been for this podcast and the blog, I may have taken, like, a month off. Like, that's where I'm at. And I've never taken a month off. I've taken a week off here and there before, but I've never taken a month off. I'm just bored of it. It's the same old shit. And they're not adding much.
I mean, I have to agree with you there. And in today's, like, wrestling world, there's so many good promotions out there that you could be watching instead of WWE. Yes, they don't have the money and, you know, all of that the WWE has, but, I mean, Ring of Honor is really good right now. New Japan is one of the top wrestling promotions in the world right now. And they continuously, you know, churn out some of the best matches. Lucha Underground is just fantastic, especially if you like the storyline aspect of it. Because not only is the wrestling good, but the story is good. It's just there's so much out there, there's so much for everyone, and it's almost to the point where if you didn't watch Raw or SmackDown, you still got NXT, 205 Live, Ring of Honor, New Japan, and everything else. It's a great time to be a wrestling fan, and I just wish that WWE Creative for Raw and SmackDown recognized that. Because we have options. I mean, yes, that's the biggest promotion in the world, but there's so much else out there that we can watch.
Alright, so here's my best question I'm going to ask you. Is your relationship with WWE the most abusive relationship you've ever been involved in your life? Because it is for me. It's the single most... It's like a lifetime movie that's been going on for almost 30 years. It is absolutely fucking abusive. So does it feel abusive to you?
Yeah, it feels... Almost to the point where I keep getting built up and getting let down time after time. I feel like that, well, I hate to use this analogy because he may listen to this podcast, but I feel like Eric, my sophomore and junior year of college. And
go on.
Well, I mean, this was before he started dating, before I knew he was ever interested in me. And it was like he would see me dating somebody else, and it would be a letdown for him. That's how I feel about wrestling right now. I feel like they're dating someone else, and I love them, and I'm getting let down.
Fair enough. My analogy would be that this podcast and the blog are our two children. And you don't want to have a broken home for the children, so you stay for the children. A lot of people say, you know what, screw it, the kids. Kids will, figure shit out, and everything will be better once you leave them. But I just, I feel that the children still need the father figure, because in this case, I'm probably the bitch, because of the Lifetime movie analogy here. And right now, I can't leave because, I mean, we've been dating and whatnot for 28 years. That's a pretty long relationship to just throw away. But, I've had many talks with my partner telling them to get their shit straightened out. And every once in a while, they're like, you know what? Let's go do this. And, you fall back in love. And for that moment, everything's really good. You have that great makeup sex. You have that great Money in the Bank ladder match 2 Sundays ago with the guys. And you're like, you know what? This is why I stayed. This is why I'm staying. Like, it pisses me off. Like, they piss me off all the time. But then, like, something so magical happens and you're, like, fall in love again. That is my relationship with WWE, and I hate life.
So, with that said, why don't we, let's talk about the future, shall we? Unless there's anything else you want to recap for the week.
No, I just really want to talk about Goldust and Truth, and I felt good that we got to that.
Okay, good. So let's move on to our segment, the I'm Not Finished With You Yet segment. I am looking forward to more Carmella. You?
Wow, that's... God damn it, there is not much for me to look forward to. Oh, man. You know what? All right. I'll say I'm looking forward to what Mike and Maria Kanellis do next week to Sami Zayn, in hopes that they do actually do something to Sami Zayn.
Fair enough. So what do you? So what do you think? Let's cheer ourselves up and play Guess the Wrestler.
Sure. Let's do that.
All right. So listeners, it's my week to pick the wrestler, and I have my wrestler. But let me explain the rules. I've picked a wrestler. Kent has 9 questions he's going to ask me about the wrestler I've picked. And then he gets 2 guesses after I've answered all his questions. All right. Let's see. The usual information that we have to have before we start. My wrestler is a woman. And she's a former wrestler. You're on mute.
Son of a bitch. Russ. Hey, guys. Did this lady ever wrestle for WWE?
Yes.
Did she ever hold a title in WWE?
Yes.
Was she an active wrestler in the Attitude Era?
Yes.
Did she also wrestle in GLOW?
No.
Was she blonde?
Yes.
Did she ever date or marry a wrestler that you know of?
Not that I'm aware of.
Okay, that gets rid of a lot of blondes. Huh. Wow, that got rid of so many blondes. Actually, had you said yes, that would have made life easier. Tori had Kidman, Kelly had Test, Sable had Brock. I'm assuming Sunny doesn't count as the Attitude Era, and she never won a belt. Wow, I'm Jackie Gayda and Charlie Haas. Gosh, was she more predominantly a face or a heel?
She was a heel, I believe.
Okay. Shit, it can't be Beth Phoenix. Man. The problem with the women wrestlers in the Attitude Era was that there were so many of them, and most of them sucked that they didn't make a huge impact. And by and large, the ones that did, like, had dark hair. In all honesty, like, most of the best wrestlers had darker hair. Did Trish ever date a dude?
Well, let me clarify. She was part of the WWE in the early part of the Attitude Era. Does that help?
Yes. Was she ever a member of a faction?
Yes.
Was she ever a member of D-Generation X?
No.
Shit! Alright. Because there was another Tori who was a member of DX. Okay. Well, those are my 9 questions. Early Attitude Era. Marlena was with Goldust. Sunny was Candino. Sable. Blonde. I mean, really, you don't have to answer this, but is this something that's more obvious than what I'm probably thinking about?
If you asked me if she wrestled anywhere other than the WWE, that might help. What may help you guess?
All right. My first guess is it Alondra Blaze?
Yes, it is.
She's the only other blonde I could think of, and I don't know. Last I knew, she was dating like a monster truck driver guy. So all the blondes, even Keebler, was with dudes. So like almost all the blondes actually have a history with wrestlers in some instance. So it was really, if it wasn't Tori and it wasn't Alondra, I had nothing. I don't even know any other blondes that were in that, you know, mid to late 90s era. It's tough. It's interesting, though. There are so many women. Next week, Russ gets to do Guess the Wrestler. I did Guess the Wrestler for, like, 3 out of 4 weeks at one point, so, like, basically next week Russ gets it, then the week after you get it, then I'll finally take a turn.
Makes sense.
Did you have any news stories this week? Or
pretty much no. The Alberto Del Rio page was my big wrestling story of the week. And really, okay. I just wanted to talk about where we put Paige if she comes back. Because now that she's done with Del Rio, she'll probably come back.
Oh, God. Yeah, I would think so. Son of a bitch. I'm trying to get to... Oh, okay. I'd like to go on a little grinding of my gears, if I may.
Oh, yes, so absolutely.
So here's a list of things that grinds my gears. People who squeal their tires for no reason in a parking lot, kill yourselves. Bikers who feel the need to rev their engines just to be loud and get attention, kill yourselves. WWE overusing the term historic, we've already been over, but whoever's behind that, unless you're Vince McMahon or Triple H, kill yourself. Another thing I'd like to complain about, so I have nobody in my horror movie blog group is ever going to listen to this, but here's what's been going on. So everybody nominates a movie, and then we have a big group vote, right? We have 2 couples. When they vote, you're not allowed to vote for your own pick because everybody would just vote for their own pick, you know what I mean? So you have to vote for somebody else's. The couples pick their significant others. You know, if you have 10 people voting and 4 of them are in relationships, that's 40% of the vote that's already predetermined. And I think people took offense to it when I said, hey, knock it off. Because I know damn well one of the people, I won't say who, one of the people, I know their vote was bullshit because they're not into that type of movie. I know that to be fact. So I called them out. I went on this huge rant 2 days ago. I'm like, I don't care. Making unpopular decisions. I completely, like, just... I went fucking Vince McMahon on their asses. I'm just like, listen, pick what you think. Don't worry about your significant other's fucking feelings. You know, I know that you want to make them happy, and that's fine. I do get that. I truly do. But it kind of kills the whole process of a vote. I feel you can at least understand and appreciate how frustrating that is for me trying to have a fair and non-biased thing. I didn't want to make a rule that, hey, you can't vote for your film or your significant others. That's kind of a bullshit thing to do. But by the same time, I'm like, guys, try to fucking knock this shit off a little bit, please. So that was a bothersome thing. And finally, Friday the 13th, the video game. There's so many issues with this game, and it's such a great game. I know me and Steve talked about this, like, last week. Whatever. I don't care. I'm still talking about it. Love the game. Got Eric to buy it. Him and I have been playing it. Having a great time. The Xbox is completely broken. Matchmaking is next to impossible because something's wrong with their servers, and it's been out for a while now, so fix your shit. More importantly, this morning I was playing as Jason, and the game is you play as Jason, you take on, like, 7 or 8 counselors. Well, now people, because the developers fucked up the game. They gave out all these free experience, used the experience to get perks. You can have 3 perks per counselor. So people got all these extra perks, and now the counselors, if they work together, are so overpowered that as Jason, you can't do anything about it. So for 20 minutes, I got gang raped by these counselors because they had such high perks. It wasn't because I sucked. I'm not great. I'm average. Very average at this point. I should not have... I couldn't do anything. Every time I moved, I got hit from behind, stunned, put on the ground. I spent 17 minutes placing traps in front of a car so they couldn't get into it. They eventually got in, and I couldn't kill everybody because as soon as I dragged one person out of a car, I got hit, knocked on the ground. I'm fucking Jason fucking Voorhees. So, people, I know it's, like, cool that you kind of want to play a game and win. Like, you know, there's competitive people. People want to win a game. I get that. But sometimes there's something to be said for the interest of, like, playing a game based on your skill and the interest of fairness. And right now, and this says a lot, like, the current generation of gamers, like, the millennials and, you know, 20, they don't give a fuck. They will use any exploit possible, and they just don't care. If you're Jason, you go to kill them, they'll just drop out of the game so you don't even get the experience points for killing them. Like, something has to give, and this has been bothering me all week. So I feel good that on a wrestling podcast, I get to vent about a video game that none of our listeners are actually ever going to play. Whatever. Also, fuck Russ. And that's what really grinds my gears this week.
Well, there you have it, everyone. Some of those things, yeah, I can agree with you. But just a disclaimer to all of our listeners, we don't condone people killing themselves. We're not for that. We just want to say that, you know, legal disclaimer, blah, blah, blah. With that being said, for Kent and I, we're going to say goodbye to our listeners for another week, and we'll talk to you next one. Good night, everyone.
July.
Oh, go ahead, Kent.
July 1st, Jaws blog's coming out. Celebrate July. More importantly, celebrate the end of this god-awful month.
I got to agree with you there.
Also, I also want to throw out, I got asked out on a date by my gay friend, so we go watch Stephen King's It when it comes out. So hooray for Gay Pride Month. I haven't been asked out on a date in forever. Granted, of course, I had to be by a gay dude, but you know what? You take what you can get.
Exactly. And for that, I say congrats. I think. All right, everyone. Have a good night. We'll see you next week.
Let's see. Russ's horrible impersonation of Nidal!
Yeah.
I
think I do it better. Night all.
Yeah. Fuck you, Russ.